This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number two as we roll along into Thursday. Not just any Thursday. It is opening night of the NFL. Rams and the Buffalo Bills. Mike Kinnaird's going to join us later on in this hour, and we're going to get some thoughts on some teams. As I mentioned a couple of times today, there's a lot of movement this offseason, and there's movement every year, but it just feels like with the new ability now of teams to sort of look at players and go, yeah, you know what, you're extremely valuable to us, but the old idea of is we will keep you at any cost, it's kind of been put on the, you know, sort of on the wayside right now. I mean, Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, Russell Wilson, major, major players that have gone on to other teams, valuable players to their to the team that they were on, and now even more valuable to the teams that they are on. 10 new head coaches, one-third of the NFL, just a little less than one-third of the coaches in the NFL were let go or moved on their own. And even the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a team that went to the playoffs last year, Bruce Arians moves up, Todd Bowles is in. Of course, you've got turnover in a place like Houston and Jacksonville that were looking for head coaches because they didn't have very good seasons. But Matt Eberflus is in Chicago. Nathaniel Hackett is in Denver. Josh McDaniels is back as a head coach. So there is so much this offseason. Teams like the Giants and the Jets did really, really good in the draft. Trey Lance is taking over. Like the 49ers and the Bears are playing against each other this weekend, and it is a battle of two quarterbacks that had sort of had to wait a bit to get their starting job 1 year, but they were wanted, people wanted them almost immediately. Jimmy Garoppolo led the team to the NFC Championship, but when you say lead the team, it has to be kind of in quotes because it wasn't quite like that. But nevertheless, he's the quarterback, you get credit. But the 49ers are going with Trey Lance. Justin Fields had to wait, and they had to go, nope, Andy Dalton's QB1, and eventually he did play his rookie season, but now he's the guy. So two second-year quarterbacks are going to be duking it out at Soldier Field. You've got Patrick Mahomes now without Tyreek Hill. You've got Aaron Rodgers without Davante Adams. You got a new head coach down in Miami, an offensive guy that can help Tua Tagovailoa and those weapons. A lot to like. And, oh, by the way, who actually is going to be calling plays in New England? How is that going to work now that we've reached the regular season? Oh, there's a lot to dissect. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. More NFL. We'll also get into some other news that happened yesterday. Aaron Judge hit yet another home run, and it looks like he's really on track for this 62 mark. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it is a Thursday, but it is also the good, the bad, and the dumb, because we give that to you every day, not just on Throwback Thursday and not just on opening night of the NFL. You get it all the time, so what's the good of the day?
The good of the day, I'm going to talk about one of this generation, our generation's greatest athletes.
Okay.
John Daly.
He's the man.
He's the man. If you haven't caught it, do yourself a favor. Look at this ceremonial first pitch he had before the Cardinals game yesterday. Ugh. A laser strike. No effort at all, just kind of walked up. I don't even know what you call that kind of walk. A stroll? He just walked up the pitcher's mound, turned around, and wearing just shorts and flip-flops, fired a dart directly to the catcher. It was nothing.
That guy is as comfortable in his own skin as anybody I have ever seen on the large stage.
Yeah.
He does not care.
He knows exactly who he is.
He knows exactly who he is, and he must get so – either two things. Either he gets so much positive affirmation for that he just goes, great, or he goes, I don't care if everybody hates me. I'm still going to be this guy. It's probably both. He probably is like, probably I'm going to do it anyway, and then people just love him anyway. I mean, people love John Daly. It is a crazy love affair with this guy. He is just a joy.
And I just can't.
He said
get
he wanted
over...
to be on Live, and Greg Norman said he was too old. If I was Greg Norman, I'd sign him tomorrow.
Oh my God!
Are you crazy? Put John Daly on the
Why
Live
not?
Tour.
I mean,
what are you trying to do here?
What was remarkable to me. I mean, when he first came out, way way back in the yesteryear, you know, it was like a revelation. I mean, guy just could crush the ball. and you know had a decent short game, winning majors. And then for me, it feels like he just disappeared off the face of the planet.
Yeah,
except for all those Hooters appearances outside the Masters.
He won the two majors really early, 91 and 95, and then basically wasn't really competitive that much. But a lot of demons. I mean, a lot of demons. But Tiger said Tiger's always said John Daly is one of the best golfers in the world.
Well, like, and that's my point is that he now has his, I don't know, is it a cult following status?
That might be true. Yeah, that might be true.
I mean, you know, we can talk about him and people might hear about him. It's like, oh, he's one of the greatest golfers ever.
You want to see
kind of feel about him.
A couple of years ago, Tiger and John Daly were actually in a playoff at Hardin Park in San Francisco for a match. Somebody put together just the quick highlights and like shot. Daly is giving it. He's pouring them in. He's just matching Tiger. They're driving together. They're smiling. They get to this one playoff hole. They both are in. Tiger's in the fairway, but John Daly is off to the in the woods. But he's got a shot. Tiger puts it on the green. Daly hits it on the green from the woods. Tiger misses, but just taps it in. Daly putts. He's got a short putt, but he lips out. Tiger Woods is broken. I mean, he just puts his head down. He's devastated. He says afterwards, "This is not the way to win this. I don't want to win it this way." He goes, "Nope." He goes, "We should be playing more golf." He goes, "We were having so much fun out there." He says, "We should have been playing more golf." Yeah, Hardin. I forget what year it was, but it was a Tiger John Daly playoff in San Francisco, and it was. I mean, Tiger acted as if he missed the putt.
Yeah,
because he was so. It just was a fun playoff with a guy that is just as fun as John Daly. So, yeah, good. I like seeing John do this kind of stuff. He's been good. So,
yeah.
All right. What's the bad of the day?
Bad of the day. It's like clockwork, Tony. I mean, death, taxes, Mets tanking in September. You know, this is the moment we've been waiting for.
They better be really careful here. Better be really careful. Swept the Pirates in a doubleheader yesterday, but it has not been a good ride lately.
What was it, the beginning of August? They had about a 13-game lead?
They were cruising pretty good.
Maybe mid-July, 13-game lead, and now it's all gone to you-know-what.
They lead by just a half a game. Again, they played a doubleheader yesterday. The Braves won, but the Mets played a doubleheader, so they get the half-game lead.
Yeah.
But the Braves are the Braves are red hot right now.
And not only that, you know, but I mean, they got above the Braves, the Pirates, right?
Yeah, they beat the Pirates.
Braves aren't slowing down. Now Max Scherzer's going on the IL.
Yep, he's going on the 15-day IL for side discomfort.
I don't know what that is either. And all I can think
about,
that
seems very vague to me, doesn't it? It could be broken ribs. It could be indigestion. I have no idea what that means. Like side irritation.
Yeah,
and but he's on the 15-day DL.
The only thing I can think about is that is Jerry Seinfeld right?
He said that the trumpets were the problem, right?
The performance.
Right.
The Timmy Trumpet performance against my Dodgers. That, I mean, it was leading up before that. You know, let's be real. They didn't all of a sudden lose a 13-game lead from last week. But
what's the deal with the trumpet? Timmy Trumpet was great.
We haven't won anything yet.
Why are we doing this? Did you see the Edwin Diaz bobblehead doll they got out now?
Yeah, dude, that's pretty cool.
Great.
I don't care. I mean, they're still having a time of their life. They're a lot of fun to watch, but we were kind of hoping for more baseball, and now you're in danger of not giving us that.
So if you're the Mets and you go, okay, look, I don't know how comfortable they are. I'm assuming they'd be a pretty comfortable wild card team. I don't know if Philadelphia or the Padres or Milwaukee is going to knock them out of the three-team wild card race. Do you think it's like with Max Scherzer, you got side irritation. You go, yeah, you know what? The postseason's around the corner and we're going to need him. So get him as much rest as possible. We'll be fine. I'd rather have it now than irritation bothering him in game two of a playoff. So maybe that's it. But yeah, and here's the thing: their schedules. This was an easy stretch for them. They played the Nationals. They dropped two out of three, losing back to back 7-1 games, and then they lost the opener to the Pirates before the doubleheader win yesterday.
And so I couldn't name one person on the Pirates right now.
Yeah, I couldn't either, except for O'Neill Cruz, because I think that's a cool name.
He's the kid who's throwing like 100 mile per hour from shortstop.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. No, I just know O'Neal Cruz. I think that's kind of a cool name. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. So, yeah, be careful, Mets.
Yeah.
All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Dumb of the day. Okay. I'm not going to call him dumb. All right. I'm not really saying he's dumb. I just don't know if this is a Mandela effect or not. Because maybe I missed it. I'm going to ask you the same question. But yesterday, Larry Fitzgerald announced that he is joining ESPN's Monday Night Countdown crew.
Okay. And this felt like you've heard this before?
No, this is where the Mandela effect comes in, because I don't remember him announcing he officially is retired.
That's a great point. I didn't know he was done.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of knew last season that he was on his way out.
There should have been a bigger deal made about that if I missed it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Like, was this a quiet, just at a golf course on a very, very busy news day? What are we doing here?
I mean, did his dad put a little blurb in his paper up in Minnesota, and that's all that you got?
Interesting.
I mean, basically, if he's saying he's part of the Monday Night Countdown team, he's done, right?
Yeah.
That means, you know, but we never got that. A player of his stature should have that huge official announcement.
That should have been a big, big deal. That should have been a bigger deal in Arizona, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. But we know for a fact this guy's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not even.
Oh, without question.
I mean, guy has more tackles than drop passes for his career.
He almost gave me a heart attack in Super Bowl 43. 43.
Yeah.
He almost gave me a heart attack because the Steelers with the Santonio Holmes play, and the Cardinals still had the ball. They still had a chance to try to win it. And I remember Larry Fitzgerald was running. It was very much like with Brady against the Giants, where Randy Moss was still a threat.
Yeah.
I remember Larry Fitzgerald, there was one time we almost caught this pass in the last few seconds that could have really set the Cardinals up. I'm with you. There should have been a much bigger deal than this.
At least us knowing it.
Yeah. Did I miss the big celebration of his career?
I mean, I knew.
Might have.
I mean, I kind of figured he wasn't playing again, but I still, I think, I don't know. Maybe that's just him. Like, I'm just going to go quietly into the night.
By the way, hats off to his dad for covering the Super Bowl that his son was playing in with the incredible level of professionalism. I think I couldn't do it.
No.
I think I'd have a hard time with that.
You're saying that in your writings you might be a little biased?
Yeah, well, I don't. Here's the thing. No, I think that if I was a writer and my son was in the Super Bowl, okay, so if you ever go, you see guys and they just pages and pages of notes for whatever they're writing, right? They're like, they're always jotting down stuff. I don't think I could do that. Like, I don't think I could keep track of the game if my kid was playing in the Super Bowl. Like, all the things that I would need to do during the game to write the article that I was going to write, I couldn't do it because I'd be just a nervous wreck if my kid was in the Super Bowl.
Right.
I would just be like, yeah. So, yeah, and he did catch a touchdown. He caught one over the middle. It was that put the Cardinals up. So, yeah, I think I would be freaking out.
But, yeah, so I don't know if the dub is on us, the dub is on him. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess he's officially retired, and that was his announcement. I don't know.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Again, Mike Tanner is going to join us. Is that – he's been on before. Am I getting –
Yeah, I think it's Tanier.
Tanier, I'm sorry, Tanier. It's spelled one way, and then it's pronounced another way, and I should know that because he's been on a number of times. I always like him when he comes on.
Oh, yeah, he's energetic, and I thought he's the perfect guy to have on a preview. Yeah.
To preview.
So Thursday we're gonna have him on football.
17 minutes, to be exact, he'll be on. We'll come back and just wake up call on Sports Map Radio.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic boy, aboard this tiny ship. The mate was a mighty sailor.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, Gilligan's Island, we're doing TV shows of 1966 because on this date, Star Trek debuted on TV. It's Star Trek Day today, Throwback Thursday. This was always a fun show because I always was fascinated with the inventions the professor would make.
Came up with
various things. That was always cool.
I saw a tweet recently about Gilligan's Island. I was trying to find it because I thought I had saved it. And I don't remember who put it out there. I do apologize. But he essentially had said, because of the make of the boat, what kind of boat it was.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. You know what? It was Mike Leach.
Yeah. It couldn't have gone that far.
It would only, you know, because of how fast it could go, it only traveled in 3 hours, probably 40 miles.
Yeah. And somehow the storm just took him to a place nobody had ever. I always thought about Gilligan's Island was they always ran into somebody who just conveniently wouldn't tell anybody that there were people on the island. There was always like an astronaut or somebody, and they would just go, no, that's it. They were on there. Do you remember when they finally got off the movie where they finally got off, like they built a huge raft?
Yeah.
And then they ended up back on the island later.
Well, they all went back on purpose.
They all went back, but they ended up back on the island. They same thing. Like they showed them, like somebody went, and here we are. This is our old island.
I think my favorite guest appearance, and it wasn't a celebrity or anything like that, it was the guy who surfed all the way to the island.
Yeah, right. God, that must have been difficult to come up with storylines every single week.
Here they are on an island again.
Look at what they did with Lost. They got so crazy with that, but Gilligan's Island was like, I'll just throw in all sorts of different people.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? The Harlem Globetrotters. They appeared.
Harlem Globetrotters. That's right. I mean, the Harlem. Yeah, that was a movie too. So there are I tried to count this out, and so forgive me if I'm missing one, but in the United States, I think there are four times where a sport goes very late into the night, where people on Twitter might go, "Is anybody else up watching this?" All right, and I tried to count. One would be a very, very long baseball game, right? Maybe it even starts in Colorado or Los Angeles or wherever that goes like 15 innings. And people are like, anybody watching this? And it goes until like 2 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time. The second would be if, you know, well, it wouldn't necessarily be on the West Coast, but like Pac-12 after dark where it goes into overtime, college football. It's a Saturday and like USC is playing Stanford and it's going into like four overtimes and people in the Eastern and Central time zone. It's like way past midnight, but still people will go, who's still up for this? The third, I think, is when we get to the NHL playoffs and we get an overtime game, third overtime game in Edmonton, let's say, and it's really late into the night because overtime is the full 20 minutes. So they do one full 20-minute overtime, a second full 20-minute overtime. They're going into the third full 20-minute overtime, and it's getting really late. And it started late, so it's ending late. And people, again, is anybody still up for this? And the other one is tennis. And every now and then a U.S. Open match will go really late into the night. And last night, Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner, two guys that are the young guns of the sport. Alcaraz is 19. They played a 5-set match last night that I didn't watch one second of because it ended at 2:50 in the morning in New York. And there were still a lot of people there. And why wouldn't you? You just go, I'll sleep when I'm dead. I'll watch this. So everybody this morning was saying this was one of the greatest tennis matches in the history of tennis. This was a 5-setter, 6-3, 6-7, 6-7, 7-5, 6-3. And the 19-year-old Alcaraz is heading to the semifinals where I don't know who he'll play. I think he'll play Tiafo, but I'm not sure yet. But nevertheless, I didn't watch any of it. And now I feel like what is that? Fear of missing out? FOMO?
FOMO?
Yeah, I feel a little FOMO this morning.
Well, that's part of the problem with this. And, you know, we talked about this earlier. It was like with Williams and Nadal out, you lost your two star powers. And then, you know, then you had two other stars, Coco Gauff and Nick Kyrgios. Kyrgios. I don't know how to say his last name. They're both out. And so it's like, okay, what does the U.S. Open have to offer for us?
Well, they got an American now in Francis Tiafoe.
We should be rallying behind him.
This match was unbelievably epic, apparently. I mean, everybody was – there was. I don't know who stayed up for this, but apparently there were more than I thought who said, I'm watching this to the end. And then there's Casper Ruud, I've never heard of him, and Karin Khachanov of Russia. Again, whatever. Again, Novak Djokovic couldn't get into this thing? Seriously?
He wasn't allowed.
Seriously, wasn't allowed to come in. Couldn't get into New York. Most ridiculous thing in the world. Novak Djokovic is not in this thing, because of the vaccination status when people were pouring into these stadiums all this last 2 weeks.
I mean, you got a guy getting a haircut
the
other day.
I know. It's unbelievable.
I think even though I'm not a big Novak fan, I think he would have been better suited to be in that stadium than the guy getting a haircut.
I am not trying to minimize COVID and the people who did die from COVID and whatnot, but I think future generations are going to look back and wonder what the hell we were thinking. What the hell all this stuff was about. I mean, we don't make any sense with this at all. We haven't since it started. It's insane. It's insane that he couldn't come to New York City. Insane. Just like it was insane when Kyrie Irving couldn't play basketball. It was ridiculous. What is going on at this tennis facility is with fans coming in? They're not checking vaccination statuses of anybody watching, right? People pouring into that place, and only players and personnel. I guess everybody feels safe. Even if you had, you could have 19,000 people all unvaccinated, and no one would know. And Novak Djokovic can't play.
I think it's because that when you're on a tennis court, you're in close proximity to everyone.
I guess so, right?
Oh, yeah. Wait. No, I'm sorry. That's wrong.
Yeah, I guess so. Unbelievable. And again, this is no knock on these guys that are doing great. Tiafoe is a great story. This Alcaraz, he's a third-seeded player, and he played an unbelievable match, 19 years old. First 19-year-old to reach the semifinals on the men's side since Pete Sampras. But I don't know. But I felt like I missed out last night, so that's why I brought it up. So, you know, I was like, 3 o'clock in the morning. If I had gotten up and it was like 2 a.m. and I threw it on and was on, I probably would, all right, whatever. But I wasn't up at 2 a.m. to watch a tennis match between two people I don't know much about. Dan Wolkin, who we've had on the show before, he posted on Twitter, it's not hyperbole, last night was the greatest tennis match ever played. That's a big statement. It's a lot of good tennis matches. I usually want some meat in that. One other note, non-sports oriented. We're going to get to Mike Tenier about the NFL. Apparently, the Queen is on her deathbed.
Yeah,
over in England. Did you hear this?
I just saw that come across the wire.
Yeah, they just caught it. Apparently, she's in real serious condition, and it looks like what people have been waiting for decades is about to come to fruition. That England's getting a king.
I'm not a betting man, but I would have put solid money that William would have become king before Charles.
No doubt, right? No doubt. That woman looked like she was going to live to be 125 years old.
With her corgis.
Yeah, no kidding. But that's the report out of jolly old England. We could be...
She'll rebound.
You know what's weird about this? For many, many, many people in this country who follow this sort of thing, I guess, this is the first time in their lifetime that England will have a king.
Yeah.
Right, she has been the Queen of England for since the 50s, right?
At least,
since she
was a kid. Maybe before that,
she was a young girl. Now, so that's the big story over there. And are we gonna have to watch a coronation and all that? Garbage.
You're gonna have to watch.
Every news channel gonna be covering this thing live all day?
Tony, just prepare yourself. You're gonna watch a funeral. It's going to be the most extravagant funeral that has ever been seen. England will be in mourning for God knows how long. And then, you're going to have to watch the coronation. Now, do they do it? Like, you know, if the president of the United States is killed or dies in office, they immediately go to the vice president.
Right, that's very true. And they go, here you go, on the plane, here's the coffin, like Lyndon Johnson, right? Boom, you're the president.
Do they do the same thing? Like, does somebody just run and goes like, I need the Queen's sword?
That's right. Right. You're now king, but we'll do the fun stuff later.
Go get the crown, Jules.
I know
now.
You're in mourning. I know she was your mom, but you're the king.
You're the king. Our country needs a king.
That's got to be weird. You want to be king, but you don't want your mother to die. Like, it's got to be a weird emotion, right?
Can't you retire? I thought for sure she would retire and said, all right, Chuck, you can be the king.
Chuck, it's yours. Take it. Oh, thank God football season.
She didn't want him to have it.
A coronation. She didn't want, not at all. She's like, I'm going to live. Now we'll see.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it is Star Trek Day on a Throwback Thursday, launched on this date in 1966. We're doing TV shows from 1966. This is Get Smart. But the NFL season starts tonight, L.A. Rams and the Buffalo Bills, and then we are off and running until mid-February, where the Super Bowl will be in Glendale, Arizona. Mike Tenier joins us, football outsiders. Always love the energy that he brings, especially in the morning. How are you, my friend?
It is opening day for the NFL and Star Trek Day. My
time
is over. This is like my birthday and Christmas and everything else wrapped into one. I could not be happier.
All right. So what do we know? They've been pretty – we're just going to have to take their word for it, I guess. What do we know about Matt Stafford's elbow for tonight?
We're taking their word for it, except that, you know, I have been keeping my eye on every report coming out of training camp and practices day to day, and, you know, what the beats have been able to see and what they've been able to share and tell each other and things like that. And it sounds like he's been throwing a lot. Like, they've been limiting him in some 11-11, 7-on-7s. But it's not like the old Andrew Luck thing where, like, he was inside of a hangar throwing tennis balls. It's nothing like that. So, you know, when you look at it, it's like, well, he's an older quarterback. He has a shoulder injury. He's been bothering him for years. On the one hand, you think, well, that's kind of like a pitch count. How many times do you really throw deep? Like, how many times does the quarterback really have to, like, challenge the strength of his arm in the course of a game? 5, 6, 7, 8 times? I have a funny feeling Matthew Stafford's going to be just fine as we go through this 2022 NFL season.
Let's talk about the team on the other side of it, Buffalo. And we've been speculating, like, listen, there's a lot of pressure on this team to get to the Super Bowl and win the Super Bowl. But the AFC is so loaded that it may not happen. They could have a great season and it still may not happen. But that being said, smart move to take Ken Dorsey, move him up to the offense, keep it in-house because Brian Daboll left.
Yeah, everything they want to do there is about continuity. And they've been excellent at maintaining that continuity. If you just look at it during, you know, every couple of days, it seems like another in-house player is getting another 4-year extension. You know, Dawson Knox the other day. That's the system there. That helps take the pressure off a little bit. Like, other teams, I'd look at it and say, oh, it's pressure, pressure, pressure. The Bills went from, you know, rebuilding team to playoff team to almost a Super Bowl team. They've taken every step along the way. They've had some of those games where it's like, oh, we learned our lesson. And we weren't ready for this. It seems like they're ready for anything. After that Chiefs playoff loss last year, I guarantee they're ready for anything the NFL throws at them pressure-wise.
There's about a third of coaching changes in this league, and some are brand-new guys, offensive coordinators getting their first job. Some are guys that are just moving on to something else. Josh McDaniels is back as a head coach. Doug Peterson is back as head coach. Lovie Smith as well. Todd Bowles. But of the 10, is there one or two or three that you are really looking at to say, you know, they're taking over a good situation there, and I think they'll do good things. Is there anybody that you're watching for?
Well, let's see. Todd Bowles gets Tom Brady.
Right.
And everyone else. And he also has the former head coach nearby in case of emergency break glass, and Bruce Arians is sitting there drinking a scotch in the front office. So that's a very strong situation. He does inherit that pressure, though, and that is a situation. So you go back to Doug Peterson. Talk about inheriting zero pressure. Absolutely no pressure whatsoever. Don't kick the special teams guys during practices, and you're better than the last coach. Peterson gets that. He gets to come in and be his sort of sitcom dad type of guy, where it's like, everything's going to be fine, guys. Let's just work together. And that's going to, for this year, that's going to work in Jacksonville. It's a decent roster, too. This is a team that could go 6-11, 7-10. But if Trevor Lawrence has some better stats and looks better and everybody's happier, then Peterson's going to come out with a big win.
We've seen this situation where so many times, I mean, it's almost as old as hat, where there's a rookie quarterback, everybody wonders when he's going to take over, but then there's this veteran that he's just sort of behind. That's what's going on in Pittsburgh. Do you think Mitch Trubisky hangs on to that job? I mean, what are Pittsburgh Steelers fans expecting out of Mitch Trubisky when they really want Kenny Pickett?
I think in the short term, it's a matter of, I never thought this was a real controversy. I think this team wanted Mitch Trubisky to win, and they want Kenny Pickett to be ready for 2023, 2024. And then we had a couple of preseason games where it's the fourth quarter and Kenny Pickett throws a touchdown. And like, the controversy is on. In the short term, I look at this, and the Bengals and the Patriots are the start of this schedule. This is a difficult schedule. You don't want a rookie going out there and flopping. If Trubisky goes out there and flops, you look like the hero when you put Pickett in there. So I look at a stretch. When you get closer to the bye for the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Buccaneers are past them. The Bills are past them. The Patriots and Belichick are past them. Then you get to the second half of the season. Either the pressure is not on Pickett because the team is already falling apart, so to speak, and just get out there and you got some easier games, or they're still in the playoff hunt. And if they're still in the playoff hunt, they're probably better off going with Trubisky than Pickett anyway. So it's a good situation because there's no desperate thing. Like, we desperately need to replace somebody. We can go with the caretaker, win games with our defense, and if that fails, Plan B is sitting there right there, and that can be our plan moving forward.
I want to stay with the Steelers for a second because we were doing our previews this year, and I heard a good theory about where this season could go. Last year, again, I don't know if 9-7-1 gets you into the playoffs in a better AFC, but they got that record and needed some help, but they did it with a very, very limited Ben Roethlisberger. If you get if you get better play and more options downfield with Mitch Trubisky, could the Steelers be kicking around the playoff tire when this is all done?
I think that's exactly it, and that's why when they brought Trubisky in, I thought, yeah, I get it. This guy's more mobile than Roethlisberger. I'm more mobile than Roethlisberger at this point. He doesn't have that super decision-making, but Roethlisberger needed all the decision-making he could get because he couldn't move or throw anymore. So this is a team that's built for, I call it yak and sacks. They're going to get sacks on defense. They're going to get yak from all those receivers and Najee Harris in the passing game. Offensive line is still kind of a mess, but yeah, you can get that formula to a wild card, get that into the playoff berth, and that means the team doesn't have to rebuild. The Steelers can go through this without necessarily having a big rebuild, keeping the franchise moving, and then they could turn things over in the following year to Kenny Pickett. They kind of got a little bit of the best of both worlds if everything works out according to plan. And, you know, I understand what they did this offseason. I think it was a pretty clever way of approaching it.
Russell Wilson, Nathaniel Hackett, two new people in Denver. Is this a home run right away, or do you think it needs to grow a little bit?
Well, I think it's going to be better than what they're used to in Denver.
No doubt.
I think it's going to be a home run when they play the Seattle Seahawks. Other than that, you mentioned it with the AFC, and like all these, not everybody can have the dream season, and so somebody could possibly fall apart. And you're right, Wilson and Hackett could have an adjustment period. We didn't see that starting offense at all in the preseason. I don't think that's a huge worry, but I'd be worried if I was putting a new quarterback and coach out there and say, week one, here you go, guys, that there might be some communication errors and timing errors and things like that. I go back to, Hackett came from the LaFleur system with the Green Bay Packers. And LaFleur came in with the Packers and had to deal with Aaron Rodgers, who's like, Aaron Rodgers is going to do things Aaron Rodgers' way. And at the beginning, it was a little wobbly, but then you look at it. Every year, it was like 13-3 or, 14-3, 13-4, depending on how many games in the season. They worked it out together. They found the detente between the two of them. I think it's going to be similar with Hackett and Wilson, where Wilson's going to have to be like, yeah, you know what? I am going to listen to you with this part of the playbook. Hackett's going to have to say, it's 3rd and 10, go be Ross, go cook, go do your thing. And when they find that, and I think they will find that, I think you could have a special Denver Broncos team. But you're right, it might not be week one, week two, week three, week six.
All right, New England Patriots. For 20 years, Bill Belichick has always gotten the benefit of the doubt whenever you'd go, I wonder what's going on over there. But this play calling and who's calling play thing seems to have been grabbed by that fan base and people even outside of it and going, what exactly is going on there? Big deal, little deal, no deal, what's going on there?
I think it's a medium deal. I think it's legit. Again, I talked to reporters up there who've been there 20 years, who've been like, in Bill we trust, in Tom we trust. That's the way it's been. They know what a practice is supposed to look like. Let's put it that way. These aren't like new beat writers who don't know what it's supposed to look like. It has looked like a mess. It's looked bad. They know the symbols. They're used to not talking bad about this team, and they're talking very bad, very apocalyptically about this team. Now, it might settle down as the season goes on. Let's face it, they're not going to line up and not know how to line up. It's gotten overstated about, how bad Patricia could be, how bad Judge could be. I don't think it's going to be ideal. I'm going to just mention one other thing. It's not just the play calling. This team has no speed. When I saw Mac Jones out there looking for open receivers in the preseason, it's like, okay, there's Kendrick Bourne, there's Nelson Aguilar. Who goes fast? Nobody's fast. So when they're playing real defenses, the defense is going to be like, hey, we can play up to stop the run. We don't have to worry about the deep pass. Mac Jones doesn't have a great arm anyway, and these guys aren't going to get deep on us. That, in addition to the play calling, could be a very rough year for New England Patriots offense, and that means they're going to be trying to win a lot of games by like 17-14 final scores. I don't know how many of those they have in them these days.
Let's go to Tom Brady. How much is that offensive line and some of the injuries that they've had going to affect the Buccaneers? He's been able to overcome some stuff. Can he overcome this?
That's the thing. I think he can overcome age. I think he can overcome some of the personal problems we've been hearing about. I think he could overcome an abandoned offensive line, but not all three of them. It's like a perfect storm of the worst things for Tom Brady. Now he's not getting any more mobile. And now it's not just the pass rush danger, but the pass rush right up the middle. That's the biggest problem for Tom Brady. He can't step up in the pocket if he can't trust his center, can't trust his guards. And that's kind of where they're at right now. And then, yeah, you throw in that he has had a little less practice time than he's used to. That Sunday night game is going to be interesting because it's a team that doesn't trust their center versus the team doesn't trust their left tackle in the Dallas Cowboys. And it could be a game where it's like whichever quarterback can get the ball out of their hands quickly could win that game. And, you know, your first thought when you hear that is like, well, Dak Prescott, he can escape and stuff like that. Never put it past Tom Brady to say, oh, I've only got 6/10 of a second to throw. Ball's going to be out of my hands in 5/10 of a second.
Cincinnati Bengals, we've seen teams go to the Super Bowl, but, you know, in the end, they still have some work to do. It looks like the Bengals went out and fixed some problems. How much better are they going to be in 2022?
I think we're asleep on them a little bit. I think a lot of people landed on, well, the Bills are the team to beat. And look at all these other teams, because, you know, this team added Tyreek Hill, and this team added Khalil Mack, and this team added Davante Adams. And the Bengals added an entire offensive line. They added an entire offensive line. So Lyle Collins and Karras and the other guys they bring in, not necessarily names that, like, are on the marquee, but this is a team that I think could stay right where they should be, which is in that playoff mix. Now, they got hot in December last year. They made the Super Bowl. No one can take that away from them. That did not look like a Super Bowl team up until about, you know, week 16 or something like that this year. It could be a little bit of a step back. Let's see what happens. They start out with the Steelers, Cowboys. That's a pretty tough 1-2 punch. We're going to know a lot more about this Bengals team after that.
Tennessee Titans, Derrick Henry, yeah. That formula has been working. This is an AFC where everybody's chucking it and everybody's got great quarterbacks. Is the Titans formula still valid enough to be one of the top teams in the AFC?
I don't think so. You know, Football Outsiders, we updated our projections to footballoutsiders.com where we run, you know, thousands of simulations of the season. The Colts wound up winning the AFC South, and this may come as a shock to listeners, but the AFC South was so much worse than the rest of the other divisions that, like, their teams were, like ranked, like, 16th and 20th, et cetera. But that kind of shows you where the Titans are. Obviously, those projections put Harold Landry no longer in the lineup.
That's right.
On the edge rush. You know, they don't have A.J. Brown, and Treylon Burks had a weak preseason. It's very hard to say, oh, he's going to replace A.J. Brown. So this is a team that wanted to win with running and defense. They're going to be running into 8, 9, 10-man boxes. Who even knows what's going on? You know Henry's coming back from an injury. You know he's kind of been overworked. And now the defense is weak because they lost one of their strongest pass rushers. So, you know, I like the program there. I think Vrabel can probably manufacture some wins. He's going to have to manufacture quite a few wins to get this team over the hump this year.
Mike Tenere, again, Football Outsiders. And Brent Kern is gone. 2009 he's been with the team punting the football.
And
right?
Well, yeah, I mean,
at some point, you think you have job security.
One of their biggest playoff wins, remember, they pinned the Patriots at the 3-yard line.
That's right.
Punt, and it was like the Tom Brady pick six, and Tom Brady said, screw this, I'm leaving New England forever. So that's a team that needs the special teams to be on point to kind of get what they, because they manufacture wins. So losing Kern might be a little hidden disadvantage for them.
That's right. Mike, good stuff. Thanks for the energy, as always, my friend. We'll catch up with you as the season goes down. Thanks a lot, my man.
Live long and prosper.
Yeah, Mike Tenere again, Football Outsiders, talking some NFL. It is Star Trek on a Throwback Thursday. It is Star Trek Day today as it debuted in 1966. So that is our Throwback Thursday. But again, of course, tonight, Buffalo and the Rams. So we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, I Dream a Genie on Star Trek Day 1966.
No, it sounds close.
Bewitched.
Bewitched.
I'm sorry, I was thinking the wrong show.
No,
sorry.
I mean, no, it sounds very similar, yeah.
Bewitched was a great show. That was Elizabeth Montgomery, and there were two husbands, Darren.
Yep.
There was Dick Sargent, and there was Dick York. I don't know how I know this stuff. I swear to God.
I always remember the Wayne's World person. The Wayne's World line.
Yeah.
It's like they changed it, but they didn't even know. No one.
The funny thing about that show, and I Dream a Genie was the same way, right? So you had these men that had magical partners, right? Like, well, they ended up getting married in I Dream a Genie, but like he had a magical witch wife, and they... And both of them didn't want anything to do with the magic. Like, don't do anything. Just be normal. These are people that could conjure up whatever you want at any moment's notice.
Yeah.
I'm in the mood for a sub sandwich. Bling. There it is. Bingo. And they both went, no. I'm going to drive to the store, buy the bread, buy the meal, buy all the stuff, fix it. No. Samantha, do not twitch your nose and make a sandwich. I'd be like, what's the point? Why wouldn't you? Same thing with Genie. She's like, anything you want? Oh, no, no. Don't you dare use the magic. Why wouldn't you? Yeah, can we go? Can we like zip off to Hawaii for a few hours? Because I'm getting kind of tired. Yes, blink, done. How would you like to marry a witch and the mother witch didn't like you?
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be, I would live in constant stress.
And all she did was just poke fun at him? Come on. Right.
That's all she did.
I mean,
I would live in constant anxiety.
If it was real life, it'd literally be like, you know what? Here's a tail today.
Yeah, right. That's totally right.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't like what you say or your smirk. She turns you into a aardvark or something like that. Golly. Mike Tenier, man, he brings a lot of energy, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's decent.
One quick thought. He's right about the Patriots, right? For 20 years, when you're winning, you're on top of the world. You don't say, right? The moment you struggle, they will come at you like wolves, won't they?
Oh,
it's
God.
Like, it is such a what have you done for me lately business.
I mean, I know it's far-fetched, but it almost gets to a point like, is Bill Belichick on the hot seat now?
I know. Watch out. If they lose it, watch out. People are that over-the-top emotional. Like, seriously, this play-calling thing has people going, what is he thinking? 20 years, greatest dynasty in sports.